God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Tonight, our 40-minute speaker is Mary O. from Laguna Niguel. Let's welcome her.
Good evening. My name is Mary. I'm an alcoholic. Welcome all the newcomers and those that identified and those that didn't. And I want to thank Carla for inviting me. I love you, Carla. And I want to thank my entourage for joining me tonight.
We're sorry.
They're so cute. And you disregard Russell. He's very loud. I'm going to give you just a little bit, and then I'm going to get into the meat of what I want to talk about, because I'm not going to give you a normal pitch. About 4 years ago, I got really sick of drunkalogs, and we all know how to drink. I know I need to identify, but I wanted to find out about the principles, and I was like, well, okay, we're supposed to live by these principles. Well, what the heck are they? Nobody could tell me. And so I had to do some research. And so, therefore, I have them right here because I'm old and I can't remember them. So I'm going to give a little talk on, there's a principle for each step, and I'm going to give a little talk on that. But I am going to identify my sobriety date is September 4th, 1987. I got sober when I was 35. Do the math. Don't do the math. It'll waste my time. I'm 61 years old. And I'm proud of it. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love it to death. And I'll tell you a little bit about how I drank. The very first time I drank that I can remember that was serious drinking, I was 14 years old. I was living in Texas. I was fat, and I had a polyester suit on, and it was kind of orange. The kind that if you lit a match, it would go, you know, shoom. And I had this really big girdle on, and it was the kind of girdle that was made out of like inner tube tire stuff, and we call them Spanx now. Well, they're nothing compared to this thing, and it literally, I lost 20 pounds, sort of, kind of, when I put it on. And so I went to this party, and I was 14, and in Texas, you could get your driver's license at 14, and I drove my mom's red convertible out to this party, and they served Everclear. And if you know what Everclear is, it's very, very powerful. It's like grain alcohol, kind of, sort of, and it can make you blind. And so I filled up a jelly glass this big, and they all said to me, Mary, don't do that. You can't do that. You shouldn't do that. And I said, watch me. You know, the defiance of the alcoholic. Here we are, Janice. And anyway, so I drank that, and then the room started spinning. I mean, like that. And I went into the bedroom, and I laid down, missed the whole party, and pretty soon Keith came in. And I really believe Keith thought he was going to get lucky that night, and I'm really grateful for that darn girdle, because by the time he hit the girdle, and he was trying to pull it down, he wouldn't budge. And all I remember hearing is, oh, this is too much trouble. And he left the room. And so anyway, that was not much of my drinking pattern changed from that night, you know. It was just kind of went that way for the next 21 years. And, you know, but I loved it. I want to tell you, I loved everything there was about drinking. I loved it. I loved the glasses. I loved the way it made me feel. I was beautiful. I was skinny. I was hot. I just loved it. And then I didn't love it so much. There's nothing like something so wonderful turning on you. I don't like that. I don't like it now. I don't like anything like that. I don't like it when things no longer work for me, you know, like sex, money, shopping. I wasn't a gambler. I hate losing money. I'm too cheap. But you know, I got it all. I got it all. And I was a pig for all of it. You know, I was a pig for alcohol. I was a pig for drugs. I was a pig for recreational drugs in the 60s and the 70s. You know, and I'm very lucky to be here. So I'm gonna talk about the principles, and I'm gonna talk about the steps. And the first principle for step one, which is we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and our lives had become unmanageable, is honesty and surrender. And you know, after many years of denial and thinking it was everybody else, I had to get really, really honest. And there's a level of honesty that we get here when we're brand new. It's kind of like cash register honesty. And then we have to go to that deep, deep, deep honesty. And we can lie to ourselves very, very easily. And I can still lie to myself. About 3 years ago, I started smoking all because of my sponsee's fault, because they would come over to my backyard and smoke, and I blamed it all on them. One day I said, give me one, and I'll tell you a little bit about this other disease I have at an appropriate time, but now isn't the time. And so I go to the doctor, and I have to take my husband with me because I am getting old and senile, and I need his help. And so we were at the doctor, and of course the doctor just bashes me all the time. You know, when are you going to quit smoking? When are you going to quit smoking? And so I would tell him that I only smoked 3 or 4 cigarettes, and we walk out of the doctor's office for about the fifth time, and my husband says, well, I wonder when you're ever going to get honest. And I said, what do you mean? He goes, I've counted those cigarettes, Mary. There is no... 3 cigarettes? Are you kidding me? More like at least 3/4 of a pack a day. And I turned beet red, and I was busted, and there was nothing I could say except look at myself and say, you're a liar. At 25 years of sobriety, I was lying to myself, totally lying to myself. And I quit for the next month. And the reason I quit was because I saw myself, I saw what we can do, and I didn't want anything to have control of me ever again. And that was the last thing. That was the last thing to go. So you got to get really honest when you admit to yourself, you know, that you are powerless. And if you're not real honest the first time you do it, you will eventually grow at another level of honesty, because that's what we do here. Step two. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity, so I had to find out where I was insane. I did a lot of insane things, which are irrational things, and hope and faith are the principles for step two. And faith is a process. I came here and I didn't really believe. I wanted to believe. I believe that some of you believed, but it was a process for me. I had to believe that it could work. I saw it working in your life, but I didn't believe it could work in my life. And I had to fake it till I made it. And today my whole life is about spirituality. I will always say, invite God in. I will always say, where is God in this? Because we have so much control, most of us, and we don't realize that we don't have any control. And when you let go of that and have, because you cannot be in fear and faith at the same time. I'll tell you a little story about faith. I was 4.5 years sober. My husband and I had tried to have children, and we couldn't. He had the mumps, and so his little doohickey spermies can't fertilize. They swim, but they can't make that thing happen. And so we decided to do artificial insemination, and we didn't. I didn't get pregnant, and we ended up adopting. And our son was six years old, and we got a call from that clinic in West LA, a very fine clinic. And they said, the donor has come down with AIDS, you need to be tested. And so I went in and I got tested, and by this time I was 3 years sober, and my sponsor made me go back to work. I hated her for that. I think that, you know, men, I'm sorry, but this is the way I felt. That was your job. It was your job to take care of me in a lifestyle where I didn't have to work. I don't believe that anymore. But at three or sober, she made me go back to work. So I was teaching school, and we get this phone call, and I go down there, and they said, it's inconclusive. And there's no inconclusive AIDS test. So my husband worked at South Coast Medical, well, then South Coast Medical Center at the time. And so the pathologist came in and he said, you need to start worrying. And so I didn't know that. And so 2 weeks later, I tested positive. And not only did I test positive for HIV, I had the T-cell count of a full-blown AIDS patient. They gave me a year to live, a year to be in bed, no, a year till I was bedridden, 2 years to live. And so it was a pretty much of a death sentence. And so I have to tell you, I'm so grateful at 4.5 years that I had the faith I had, because I drew on that and I said, the third day, nobody was laughing in my house. It was pretty darn serious. Everybody was moping around and everybody was pretty scared. And of course, I made a big drama out of it. I love the AIDS card. I love to pull it still. It is shocking. See, I got all you guys are all staring at me like, whoa. You know, so on the third day, I turned to my husband and I said, there's a reason I have this. I didn't know why. I didn't know what it was going to be. But I'll tell you what it was, because this is really cool. I grew up in the era of Dynasty. Anybody remember Dynasty? The big shoulder pads, all that stuff, the sex, drugs, and rock and roll. I loved it. And I wanted to be on Dynasty. I really thought I was going to be discovered. I really thought I was like, I should have been a princess, and they switched babies, and, you know, I was born to the wrong, somehow I got confused. My family didn't appreciate me, and I really believed all this. Have you ever, you know that line in the book that's called real or fancied? Well, I was fancied all the time. I had these just crazy ideas. I was very twisted. And as you can tell, I'm very attracted to twisted people. And so anyway, I got to go on TV. And our we were across the world on the front page of every paper one day, the day of Nixon's funeral. And then the TV cameras came. And I got to tell you, it was so flippin' exciting. I loved it. But my sponsor kept saying to me, Mary, take this program into that. And the purpose of that was to help people, because there was no government. Oh, it was just, it's a big mess. I won't even get into that part of it. But when I talked to the AA, I got very involved in the AIDS stuff, and obviously I didn't die, and I'm doing really well, and I've had it since 1984, and I talk a lot. I take my program when I talk about AIDS, and I've never breached that tradition. When I've gone on TV, of press, radio, and films, I've never shared it about my alcoholism. But they ask me all the time, "What is it you've got? There's something about you, Mary. What is it?" And I tell them it's God. You know, I'd really love to be able to give AA credit, because they deserve the credit, but I can't. I can't do that. So then we go to step three: faith, commitment, and surrender. Surrender. There's a series of surrenders. Somebody and I were just talking about that you, this whole thing is just a series of surrenders. And we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him, or her, or it. You know, we just have to say, there's something out there and I'm not it. My sponsor used to have this great line. We would be having a conversation and she goes, well, Mary, you've just zipped up that God suit and put it on and stepped into it. And that was me. I played God all the time. I had no concept of not running the show. I come from a family where if you're sitting still, you're unproductive. They're all energized. They look like those Energizer bunnies, you know, they just roar like that. And you can hide from being busy like that so well, and I did that, because if I sat still, then I had to look at me, and that was really hard. And these first three steps, you know, are really, really important. It's really important that you do them well. it's really important that you continue to do them. I do the first three steps every single morning before my feet hit the ground. I stay in bed unless I have to pee, and because I believe if I go get a cup of coffee, I'm already in self-will, already in it. So I do those first three steps, and I do about 45 minutes of prayer and meditation every single morning, which is another step we have, which is step 11. So, you know, all you have to do is really make that decision. You can borrow mine. It's not a tough decision. It's a decision that will change your life. At 26 years of sobriety, my life is none of my business. My sponsor told me that. And I was like, are you kidding me? My life is none of my business. I could not wrap my head around that comment. First, she told me that you were none of my business because, you know, I was kind of all in it and everybody's business. And, you know, I loved gossip and I like stirring the pot. My sponsor now told me just 6 months ago, she goes, you are such a troublemaker. You know, she said that, and it's true. I can see it. There, you know, I am not well all the time. I achieved some wonderful levels of enlightenment, but I got a long way to go, which is why I believe I'm not going to die, because I absolutely, absolutely believe there are lessons that I have to learn before I leave this earth, and there are people that I need to show that you can learn those lessons at 26 years of sobriety. Time doesn't mean anything. We just keep learning. We just keep learning. You know, time is important in Alcoholics Anonymous because we know it works, but we're all just learning. We walk shoulder to shoulder here. There's no hierarchy. I'm not any better because I've stayed sober for 26 years. I've just stayed sober for 26 years and done the work. You know, I just have more sober experiences than you. You know, but I don't consider myself better. I learn from everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous. Then the next step is step 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And the principle is courage, honesty, and soul searching. I don't know about you, but if you haven't done your 4-step, you just need to really, really do it. I had to find the exact nature of my wrongs. I had to find out who I was. I had to find out about what I did in my life of drinking that I became this woman that I did not like. And when I did that 4th step, that's exactly what I found. I did not like her. And it was really hard. I had a period of time of about a year and a half where everything I did was selfish and self-centered, and I saw it. I saw it like 7, 8, 9, 10 times a day. I'd call my sponsor, well, saw another one, click. Well, saw another one, you know, and that is what I saw. And God revealed that to me. And if he had revealed it to me all at once, I swear to God I would have slit my wrist. But it was piecemeal, you know, and that step was so important to me to see exactly the nature, not just what I did, not the resentments, but the nature of who I was. And I really didn't like her. I really didn't like that woman. The beautiful part of that, when we burn the people that I sponsor, we burn it in my fire pit, and I put my arms around them and I say, you never have to be that person ever again, because now it's a choice. Now it's a choice for us to change our behavior. And that was phenomenal to me. I didn't know I had a choice. You told me that in Alcoholics Anonymous. I learned that. I learned that I can be the best person I can possibly be. That's an amazing gift. It's an amazing thing. You know, most people don't examine their lives. Thoreau said, a life unexamined is a life not worth living. Who wants to sit down and do an inventory? Who really does that, you know? And I was asking my sponsor all the time, why do we have to do so much work? And I'm married to a man who doesn't have to do any work. And she looked at me and she goes, because he's not going to die. You are. But the truth of the matter is, my husband now is jealous. He says to me all the time, I wish I had what you had. I wish I had it. He goes, I've never seen anybody work so hard and look at their stuff and look at their part than you, Mary. He said, it's amazing because he's watched me all these years. He didn't always know what I was doing, but he sees me now, and he loves Alcoholics Anonymous. and he did not like it when I was new. When I was brand new, we had a year and a half old baby, and I was going out to a meeting every night, and he'd go, just go be with those alcoholics, and with the baby in his arms. He was so resentful. And today he says, go out as much as you need to go out. I know it gives you life. I know this is your life, and I know you're helping people. Just go. Whatever you need to do, Mary, just go. And it's wonderful. It's really wonderful. So then we get to step six, and we admitted to God, to ourselves, and another human being the exact nature of our wrongs, kind of what I talked about, the exact nature. And this is integrity and truth. And this is, this is the most difficult of all the steps, because you have to face someone, but it is the one that provides the most opportunity for growth. Because when you sit down and you share with another human being the most intimate parts of you, the things that, if you were like me, I was going to go to my grave with some of this stuff. And today, when I hear a fifth step, it is such a privilege. It is such an honor. It can move me to tears, what people reveal to me, when it's so difficult to tell another human being what we've done. And that forgiveness, for me, it was the first time I ever felt unconditional love. I had a block against love, and I come from a beautiful family. A lot of you, I know, don't come from good families. That come, you know, you come from divorce and abuse and just a lot of messed up stuff, but I didn't. And I had a family, we traveled the world, and it was, I got to go to any college I wanted to. I followed a man to college, of course. And so I was really stupid, but you know, I come from a beautiful family, and but I couldn't feel love. There was just a block. I couldn't feel it. And so when my sponsor heard my fifth step, and she hugged me, and we burned that thing, oh my God, did I feel it. It was such an incredible feeling. Because I didn't even feel that from my husband, and I was married. And I didn't feel that, really feel that with my kid. It took a long time for that block to come down. So if you have that kind of block, and a lot, because I've pulled people, I ask them all the time, did you feel like that? Have you felt like that? Have you had that? And they go, yeah, some of them. Not everybody, but some of them. You know, and it will change. Today I feel love, such love. It's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. So then we get to step six, and the principle is willingness and acceptance. We are entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. You know, defects of character are a very interesting thing. I don't know if I was ready at the time to really, I don't know if I really grasped what that meant. Today, there's a book called Drop the Rock. It talks about step six and seven. That's all it talks about. It's a little tiny book. If you're on step six and seven, I suggest you read it. It really makes you understand. For me, I just kind of faked it till I made it the first go around. I didn't really understand it, but I had to abandon some of these defects of character. I had to be willing to let them go, and I wasn't willing for all of them to go. There were some I was going to hold on to, because they were comfortable to me, because that is the way I survived. They were defense mechanisms and survival mechanisms, and then all of a sudden they no longer worked the longer I got sober. And I've had to let some of them go. Years and years it took. Years and years it took. But that's okay, because it's progress, not perfection. So we get to step seven, and the principle is humility. And this is really where we humbly ask him to remove those shortcomings. It's almost like standing naked before God. I love that analogy. Because I hate clothes. I think we should all be naked. But I really have this idea of what that means with the human body, with standing there being totally vulnerable. Stand in front of your mirror naked sometime and feel the feeling of that. It's totally vulnerable. And that's how I wanted to stand before God. I wanted God to I wanted me to feel that I was giving myself up to that. And it's been a wonderful feeling. I don't know if you've ever been to Chuck E. Cheese, but they have this thing called the groundhog thing, you know, where they pop up and you just bam, bam, bam. Well, that's how I feel about my character defects. Bam, I got one down. Up pops the other one. Bam, got that. And that is exactly what it's been like for me. At 16 years of sobriety, my husband and I lost everything. We lost all our finances. It's been a nightmare for 7 years. We've lived on food stamps. It's just been a nightmare. And we didn't want to ask our family for any money, and they didn't offer. And so, and he was president of South Coast Medical Center for 20 years. And when the merge came, he was let go. And so it was a really hard thing. And at 16 years of sobriety, a character defect that I had came back, and it's called shoplifting. And there I was sponsoring all these people, going to meetings, and I was shoplifting. And I realized it, and I was very lucky, and I went to my sponsor, and I went to therapy over it. But it came back. And it was one of the most shameful things I've ever had in sobriety. Because how can you talk about being a good, strong member of Alcoholics Anonymous and talk about integrity and all these things while I was stealing? Well, the truth of the matter is I kept it a secret for a while, I went to therapy for a while, and now I can share it from the podium. And that was 10 years ago. Because we're human. We don't get good here. We're here to get well. And a lot of us are very sick, and things can come back. The beautiful thing about that is that we talk about this inside stuff. We talk about it, and we don't judge, because we all have our stuff, and all we're trying to do here is to be better people and to live with comfortably without alcohol. Because you see, when you took away my alcohol, that's when I fell apart. I was way more together when I was drinking, way more together, because I had it all. It all looked good. I made it look good. You know, and when my alcohol was gone, I fell apart. I couldn't make a decision. I didn't know that was withdrawal. I didn't go to treatment, so I didn't know what the heck was going on. But I was a mess. I was in a fog my entire first year, the entire first year. So if you're in a fog your first year, I'm so happy for you. Step 8, brotherly love, reflection, brotherly love. Made a list of persons we had harmed, became willing to make amends to them all. Who have we harmed? And are we ready to make amends? Okay, this step. I'm going to preach on this step about making... No, I'm going to preach on the next step. This is about making a list. This is about somebody like me who wanted to say I'm sorry because I wrap it up in a neat bow and it feels good. Women especially like closure. And all you guys who have ever seen a woman had a fight with a woman, and she comes back into the room 5 times. Now, let me tell you one more thing. That's closure. She's not done, and she's got to have closure. I sponsor men, and very few men have to have closure like that. It's a female thing. So anyway, I was one of these people that always wanted to say I'm sorry because it made me feel good. And that was not what this is about. So when I made my list, my sponsor had to take like 50 people off of it. She goes, you did not harm that person. So make sure when you make your list that you run that list by your sponsor, which leads me right into step 9, which is justice and amendment. And we're going to be making direct amends. We're going to be making restitution. We're going to correct what we did. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Okay? Direct amends. We don't fax. We don't, what is that? We do text with the phone. We don't leave it on an answering machine. If we have to, we save money. We get on an airplane. We go see them. The only time that I think letters are okay, and this is just my opinion, remember, if it's not in the big book, it is Mary's opinion. So it is just my opinion that a letter is a chicken way out. I'd had one letter, and it was my sponsor told me it was my ex-husband, who I married at 19, who just Oh my gosh, I love that man so much. I needed Al Anon so bad with him. And it was just a marriage made for disaster. And so I had to make amends for my part in that marriage. And I wanted so badly to do it. And I contacted his sister, we were good friends, and she said, he doesn't want to talk to you because of his wife. She doesn't want to contend because he had three ex-wives. And the other ones had children, I didn't, and so I had to write him a letter. And I really wish I could have made it direct, but I was told not to. So that's when you don't contact somebody if it's going to harm them or their family. You just don't. So make those direct amends. Don't be a chicken. That's my motto. Continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Step 10, about 2 years ago, this is how I learned from young people. I sponsor a young woman who happens to be 24 years old. She has a boyfriend who was, I think, 3 years, two years sober at the time, and she was over at his house spending the night, of course, and she called me up, and I said, what are you doing? She goes, well, I'm sitting here doing my 10th step, and my boyfriend is writing his 10th step out. And I go, writing his 10th step? I said, what does he do for that? She goes, well, I'll let him tell you. He gets on the phone. He goes, well, Mary, there's four things we're supposed to do every single night. Where were we resentful? Where were we selfish? Where were we, Russell, help me, dishonest? And fearful, scared. And I draw blanks up here sometime. Anyway, and so he writes that out every night, and so I started doing that. I have yet to have anything blank. You would think at 26 years I would maybe not have those four things. You know, I'd maybe have one night out of the year where I don't have to write anything. I have yet not to write anything. Be careful if you tell your sponsor that. Because I was sharing this with her. I goes, oh my God, I'm writing this every night. It's so insightful. I love it. And then I do my prayers and then I meditate on it. And she goes, oh, well, that's a good thing to come visit me with. Let's discuss those four things that you write about every night from now on. And it has been a whole different thing for me. It has been a whole opening up of who I am and how I live. It's been a wonderful thing. And I learned that from a two-year-old. You know, I think that's awesome. I love it that Alcoholics Anonymous has given me the open-mindedness to be teachable still. I'm not complacent. I'm always open to learn more, to do it differently, to try something new that'll make, of course, it's kind of selfish, to make me feel better because I like feeling good. I really like feeling good. And basically, that's what this is all about. All these steps are is to make us comfortable, a way to live comfortably without alcohol. Because if we get too uncomfortable, we're going to have to drink. That's what newcomers do. You know, they get in, you know, they get their first big thing that happens. Could be dating a girl. It could be, you know, a job, whatever. And they go, oh my God, this is so painful. And they think it's going to last forever, that pain, because they haven't been through enough of it, enough times of that to know that it passes. So they drink or they use because they don't know it will pass, and they don't stay with us and watch us help, let us help you walk through that pain. They just drink and use, and then they got to start all over. I know today that when the time gets tough, when it gets really tough, you know, it will pass eventually. Although my God is very old and slow. He never does anything in my time frame, you know. So that is step 10. Continue to take personal inventory. I do that first, and then when we are wrong, promptly admit it. That's how you find out when you're doing your 10th step if you owe somebody an amends. And remember, the amends are for us. They're not for them. And remember this, when you go to make an amends, you don't want to go and make an amends and say exactly what you did, because they may remember something different. So I have a blanket statement I teach my sponsees to say. I'm sorry for the time I was not a good blank. Mother, sister, husband, friend, lover, girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever. I was wrong. Please forgive me. And that way they're not going to come back at you and say, well, what about this? And what about this? And then you get into a shooting match about, you know, what it was really about. You blanket it. And that's it. Step 11, spirituality, attunement, and making contact. I think that is so interesting, attunement, which is really becoming one with our higher power. I'm going to tell you a little story. I got 5 minutes left. What happens when we want something? We either get it or we don't, right? If we get it, we're really happy. A new car can last maybe a month of happiness. A new diamond. I was pretty much a jewelry girl in the day, and those lasted maybe 2 months. A new dress is about 10 minutes. And then you're on to the next thing, because we're pigs and I want more, right? Okay. So what happens if you don't get it, what you want? Disappointed, angry, hurt. So what do we do with the human condition of want? We can't get rid of it. So does that mean we're just screwed? No. There's an answer for that. You start wanting what God wants for you. When you walk that, when you start wanting what God wants for you, when that switch occurred for me, that shift occurred for me, and I surrendered and said, okay, God, my way hasn't worked. I'm going to try it your way. There's no fight left. Everything's a lesson. Sometimes I can see it in hindsight now. That attunement with your higher power, it's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful way to live. I never believed that I could feel this good, this clean inside of me, and this peaceful with chaos all around me. I mean, really hard stuff, disease and death and husband feeling low self-esteem and I mean, all these things that I live with on a daily basis, and I have peace of mind. It's a beautiful thing. I hope you find it. I hope you stay. Step 12, service, and more service. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to others, especially alcoholics, and to practice these principles in all of our affair. Awakening into sober usefulness. You know, I carry the message in many ways. I carry the message in sitting in a meeting. I carry the message in sponsoring. I carry the message in answering every single phone call I get. I do not screen my phone calls, and I do not think anybody should. I think that's really rude. I am available 24/7. There are people in this room that know they can call me up until 1 o'clock in the morning. There are people in this room that we have had 2-hour conversations that have lasted till 2:30 in the morning. And I love that. I'm a night owl. But they also know not to call me at 8. Although one of them in this room called me at 8 o'clock the other day and I answered the phone because I knew I was needed. And I don't know how that happened because I don't usually answer the phone, but I did. I consider it God. I can never pay back Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't do enough service. I can't help you enough. Everybody says, oh my God, Mary, you do so much. I'm pretty selfish. The reason I do it is it makes me feel good. And I really like to feel good, you know? So I do it. That's why I do it. I have been blessed beyond belief. That marriage that I had got really rocky for a while, and we were able to put it back together again. And today, the last 10 years of my marriage has been so incredible. We're a real team. We're a real partner. I never knew what a partnership was. I never could do it. It was always it was your job to make me happy and provide the things that I needed. I'll tell you, when you lose everything, you really realize it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. I've had some of the most joyful moments sitting with my husband with absolutely couldn't even afford to go to a movie. It's been a wonderful journey. It's been a wonderful lesson. I wish it were over. But I'm waiting. I'm waiting patiently. My son is 27 years old. He is not an alcoholic. That boy we adopted and his mother was a full-blown alcoholic and drug addict. But he didn't get it, and he is amazing. He has more self-esteem at the age of 3 than I ever had. And he's a beautiful human being, and I love him very much. At 26 years old, I had this young gal that I was sponsoring with blue hair, and she rode her bicycle to the Hardcore Harbor meeting, and I've got to wrap this up quick. and she, her father was gay, and he died of AIDS, so she didn't want anything to do with me, and I kind of stalked her, and eventually I was her sponsor, and then through a series of events, she needed a family, and we adopted her. And that girl just got her master's. She's a behavioral analyst, and she has a year-old child, and she's 39 years old. That was a gift of Alcoholics Anonymous. I always wanted a daughter. I just didn't know I was gonna get one at 26. I didn't get to dress her up when she was a baby, but I'll tell you what, she came into my closet, and we traded clothes when she lived here, and it was a beautiful thing. And she tells me all the time, I would never be where I was if I didn't have the family that I have, because I could not have done it, because you supported me. I have beautiful, beautiful friends in my life. Beautiful friends. Friends that travel to come see me talk. Sponsees that we share together. It's like a family. You are more my family than that beautiful family that I had. You are more my family, and I love you very much. I can't tell you enough about this program. I beg of you. It is so big. It is so vast. We use that word ad infinitum. You can just get stark raving sober, or you can get more sober, or you can reach to the limits of this thing with the spirituality concept. I cannot begin to tell you how amazing it is. I hope you find just that much of what I found here. I hope you find it. I hope you stay. I hope you do the work. And I hope you find that beautiful relationship with God, because God loves you and I